5.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We continue to cover the new year through a number of vantage points, looking back at 2021 and ahead to what might be here in 2022, and today we do that in terms of the topic of the U.S. economy and really the world economy to some extent, but especially America's economy. Noted national economist Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, we met him I think around a decade or so ago, and we have been fortunate to be able to talk with him periodically. Dr. Eisenberg, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
And he joins us from South Miami Beach, where what is the current temperature right now? What do you think?
Oh, it must be 80 degrees by now. Okay. It's beautiful outside. Perfectly sunny.
We'll just all
absolutely gorgeous.
I'll think about that as we deal with our conditions here today. So let's talk about maybe an overall broad brush stroke to kind of look at things. How would you rate the U.S. economy last year if you had to, you know, give it a 1 to 10?
Wow, I think I'd put it pretty high. I'd give it an 8. I really would. Look, we were faced with COVID in December, January of 21, when the year starts. COVID numbers were very high. We then faced the Delta variant. As the year ends, we have Omicron. GDP is still going to come to it, 5.5%. Job growth was terrific, 6 million jobs, second or third best in history. I mean, we had a terrible 20, I understand, but hey, this was a remarkable recovery, tremendous resilience, good stuff.
And what do you expect to be rating 2022?
I think 22 will continue to be another good year. Not quite as good. Job growth will slow from 6 million jobs to 4 million jobs. So we'll have 350,000 a month. The number coming up for December, we find out on Friday, it should be a blockbuster number, really high number. Inflation's a bit of a problem. Yeah, labor shortages are a problem. Supply chains are a problem, but they'll go away. This will be a good year. GDP growth easily 4%, maybe if we're lucky 4.25%. This is a good year. This will be not as good as last year, but a really good year.
What about the aspect of inflation with some of the announcements from the Fed about rate changes, et cetera?
Yeah, look, inflation's a problem. There's no question. I think that people like me had hoped inflation would by now already have begun to subside. It hasn't. That said, from everything I understand, read, look about, and hear and talk to people about, inflation's probably peaking. It will peak in the first quarter, whether it's core inflation or headline, CPI or PCE, the different measures. By the end of the quarter, we should begin to see inflation decline. Now, this is important for a bunch of reasons. It depends on interest rates. And what the Fed's doing is saying, look, we see inflation's high. We think it's going to come down also, but it hasn't come down yet, and we don't want it to get out of hand. So they're going to raise rates. Look, rates go up. That's going to push inflation down and GDP down as well, which lowers interest rates. So the fact that the Fed is on the case and is prepared to raise rates as early as essentially late March or early April of this year contains inflation expectations of the future, and that helps the economy. So I see supply chains getting better slowly, demand dissipating, interest rates going up, GDP slowing. I'd be hard-pressed to see inflation be a problem. I bet by the end of this year, inflation's down by 2 full percentage points.
Now, you mentioned the supply side issues, and some might be surprised to hear such a positive look at the economy for you when the supply chain is such a tough thing right now. There are things I was walking in a store last night. There were two or three different products, typical store, totally out of, couldn't get them. And, you know, you scratch your head and go, this didn't used to happen.
You're absolutely right. This didn't used to happen. Supply chains are a wreck. I mean, remember, what went on was household demand for goods and services, in this case, mostly goods in this case, collapsed, absolutely collapsed for services and goods declined. It fell by 20%, and then it jumps up by 40% from there. So we go from 100, essentially, down to 80, and from 80 to 120. under normal conditions, without supply chain problems, just an increase in 20% out of blue would be a terribly difficult thing to accomplish. But a 40% increase from the new lower level amidst a global a pandemic, hey, you know, this is unfortunate, but to be expected. And I think it shows pretty decent resilience. This problem will go away. These supply chains, more chips will get built, computer chips will get made. Slowly, this will, over the course of 2022, largely go away.
What about this chip issue, especially as it relates to cars? I mean, you pass car lots and you see a lot of blank space and not a lot of cars.
No joke. I take pictures of it. It's so unusual. This problem will also slowly dissipate, although this may take longer. I mean, the problem is, keep in mind, Ford and GM, these guys can't survive all that well in the long run, producing so few cars and trucks. So they want to produce more, and eventually they will. This wouldn't take longer because to make more chips, you have to build more facilities, fabrication plants, and they cost $5 or $10 billion and take a couple of years to build. So cars will have to learn to deal with either lower production for some companies or redesigning the software in the car to adapt to the semiconductors that are available. And that's where Tesla and some of these more modern companies have an edge over the legacy companies.
And I've heard, though I haven't gone looking around at cars closely lately, that there's a potential, and maybe this is already happening, for some vehicles to be produced with things that, like in a case of a new car, that they're there, they're on your dash, but until this one part shows up, you can't use it.
Absolutely right. Firms are doing that quite a lot, but it's happening when you deliver a car and say, come back in a month, and we'll fill in that part or two parts or whatever it is. And people are happy to do it. People prefer to have a new car they want missing something than no car at all, right? So this is a good compromise. This is being flexible and adapting to the situation that we've got. And, you know, car production bottomed out 2 months ago. The last 2 months, it's come up from its trough. Now, the trough is still 5 million sale units below what it should be. So we're in a really shortage position of 5 million new units. This goes on for another year. We'll be 10 million cars short in the U.S. That's a meaningful number. It'll be with us for a long time. This could wreak havoc a little bit on used car prices and new car prices for a while.
Now, what about housing prices? That has been an interesting thing to watch in the past year or so.
Oh, my God. Housing prices are unbelievable. Nationally, home prices have been appreciating at close to 20%. For some months and well over 15 for the whole year. This is really unprecedented. It's somewhat similar in price appreciation to what we saw back in 06, 07, but the circumstances are entirely different. Then it was a credit bubble feeding builders to build homes for nobody. Now, incredible demand for housing and a complete lack of inventory. And as a result, prices are going crazy. And rates remain very low, even if they rise a little bit. So I don't think affordability will knock this economy off its rocker here. House price appreciation will slow nationally, maybe not in Portland or something, but they'll generally slow, but remain very strong because demand is there, household formation's there, and there's simply nothing to buy.
And for new construction, sometimes projects are slowed down, back to the topic of supply chain shortages. The part you need or the cabinet you want or whatever you would normally go get immediately, and you end up waiting 2 or 3 weeks, and that backs up your whole project.
Absolutely. Builders complain about this endlessly. They can't get certificates of occupancy. They can't get windows. They can't close the house down. All kinds of bizarre and crazy problems persist. And this is hurting the housing market. If the builders could build 200,000 or 300,000 homes more a year, that would fill some of the shortage that's there. We have a huge shortage of 3 or 4 million homes. A couple of 100,000 a year would make a large difference, but they can't do it. Home construction activity in 22 will be barely any better than it was in 21, which was pretty much the same as it was in 20.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back with more Dr. Elliot Eisenberg when we continue the interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 inside Douglas County and News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson at 1, Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show, part of KQEN Local Talk. That'll be at 4 on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. One of our big local producers of agricultural products about ready to go through a big transition. I'll talk about the shift with Cruz Farms. Jeff Cruz, Karen Cupron Cruz, and Evan Cruz will be in studio on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County program. Looking at the economy, Dr. Elliot Eisenberg joining us from South Miami Beach, Florida this afternoon. How could the midterm elections impact the economy? Is that going to make a difference?
It probably will not, is my expectation. The expectation is that the Republicans pick up one of the two chambers, either the House or Senate, or possibly both. And if government is divided, then nothing major or meaningful will happen in the next term. So the successive 2 years, there'll be nothing going on. So it stops, essentially.
Now,
so only if the Democrats were to keep both houses would that would be a change in expectations, and that might affect economic activity.
So as we look at the nation, let's broaden that out and look at other world events potentially impacting our economy. What about Russia and the Ukraine?
That one I'm less concerned about. We've been pretty clear. We're not going to go to war with the Russians to protect Ukraine. We might like to, but we're not. Ukraine is not a NATO member, so we're not obliged to come to their assistance or rescue them from a Russian invasion. We'll impose some penalties on Russia, hopefully serious ones, and hopefully Putin will decide not to do it. The key thing that we have to do in that area is allow Putin to somehow climb down from the tree he's put himself in without giving him anything as a reward, because he's created this problem out of nothing by massing his troops next to Ukraine.
What about China and Taiwan?
Oh, okay. That's a whole different ball of wax. There's a whole bunch of issues going on there. First, if we let the Chinese invade Taiwan and take Taiwan, suddenly the Japanese and the South Koreans are going to get nervous, not to mention a whole bunch of countries in the Middle East that are fearful of Iran and have had, until recently at least, protection from the U.S. nuclear umbrella. If suddenly the U.S. is really considered a fickle friend, this might lead to some bad behavior there. But going back to Taiwan, there's a couple of things going on. One, so that's the geopolitical side. But two, Taiwan is a global producer of semiconductors. So were the Chinese to take over their production, they'd really have us in a bad way as a major global producer of semiconductors, things that we rely on in our economy. This would be bad geopolitically. It would be bad economically. It would make America look terrible. This would be a calamity.
And with China producing so many products that come to America, if China was to take action the U.S. government objected to, and whether through military action or just their verbal posturing, the U.S. objected, I mean, China's got the potential to retaliate economically and not send things here.
They do. They absolutely do. And their military is a strong military. I mean, they play games. They have war games out there and in the Defense Department. And sometimes the Chinese win these confrontations. So they're a formidable ally across the board. They could make our life miserable, too. At this point, no one has an incentive to do this, and they wouldn't in the long run. But mistakes happen, and wars do happen. Xi Jinping hasn't spent enough time in the West. I believe that he really believes we are deteriorating and we are weakening, and it is their time. And we have to convince him that his understanding of what's going on is incorrect. If he's determined to take over Taiwan, he will, but we don't want him to just do it cavalierly, thinking it's a gimme. There's a big difference.
So what action should the U.S. take?
The U.S. should be selling Taiwan as many weapons as they want. We should, I mean, there's debate about this one, but maybe we should have more of our advisors be there. We should be prepping them and helping them train extensively and letting the Chinese know delicately and privately. Again, we don't want to embarrass the Chinese. There's no benefit to that. Let them know that the defense would be strong and serious. Look at the, for example, Switzerland in World War II, the Nazis never invaded. It wasn't that they couldn't. They could have. it just would have been too painful to do it. Hopefully we can arm the Taiwanese so that the Chinese say it's just not worth the struggle. And keeping the territory will be too expensive militarily and too many body bags going home.
And then you have the potential with Israel and Iran.
Yeah, that's another bad potential story. Oil prices would clearly skyrocket in a case like that. The Iranians would do something to the Straits of Hormuz, quite possibly. You can see this one spinning out of control in a hurry. Hamas and Hezbollah attacking Israel, Israel retaliating, bringing Syria and Lebanon into this. This could be a bad one. Hopefully we're able to convince the Iranians to at least halt or slow down their nuclear get a nuclear weapon such that the Israelis don't decide to take things into their own hands. That's the problem. And I think it's in Biden's interest to have the Israelis as a credible threat. Hopefully that discourages the Iranians. But who knows?
How much?
The Iranians are a tough nut to crack. They know what they want. It's very hard to dissuade them.
How much do these world events play into our economy? Sometimes they seem awfully far away, yet my sense is that they're a lot closer and have more impact sometimes.
Well, the Russian one doesn't. I don't think the Russian invasion would have much. It would be a shock value, the stock market declines, you know, whatever, and then after a week or two, it's business as usual. The Russian one would have, the Chinese one would have much, much more because of semiconductors and major geopolitical effects that would take place. And the Israeli-Iranian one, that one, I don't know. That one's a wild card. It would not be good, but it could be awful. But it could actually not be awful if the Iranians don't retaliate much. It could be a one and done. That would be a good story.
Look back at 2021, what sectors of the market did better?
Wow, coffee beans were the number one performer in the commodity market overall, way up. Who could have predicted that one down the road, right, a year ago? Turkish currency has been the absolute worst performance. Argentina, a distant second. These are both those cases. That was man-made problems, politicians making bad decisions. Leisure and hospitality has come back. The economy's really come back. Office towers are struggling. They're a big one. Lodging is struggling. But elsewhere, things are pretty good. Education's also struggling because we can now go to school from home. Not hopefully permanently, but certainly in part of the way. But generally speaking, the economy is good. We need millions of workers. There are 10 million open jobs right now. Well more than the number of unemployed Americans, a relatively rare phenomenon.
What about the aspect of the past year in particular and really throughout the pandemic where people during this time of introspection and being alone more looked around and went, you know what, I want a different job. And people have left their jobs in numbers we've never seen.
Oh, the Great Resignation. It's even got a name. Absolutely. People are saying, look, I got stimmy checks. I have lots of unemployment, didn't have to pay my rent because of eviction moratoria or forbearance moratoria on a mortgage, didn't have to pay my student loans. This is the time to do something risky. Start a business, start out on your own as a business, or change jobs, something that you may have been afraid to do in the past. There's never been a better time to do that. So people are taking advantage of it. A lot of people are saying, hey, just because I don't have the skills doesn't mean I can't get the job because the demand is so overwhelming. Now is the chance for people to try something entirely new that they weren't heretofore able to even apply for. And they're taking advantage and doing it left, right, and center. This is a great thing in the long run for the U.S., people getting better jobs, getting better skills, being happier in their employment, and so on. But in the short run, it's causing a tremendous amount of havoc.
And in a lot of cases, it's causing employers to offer higher wages. What's the economic impacts of that?
You're right. Wages have certainly gone up. Wages, however, interestingly enough, or maybe not surprising, I don't know, the wage increases that have been the biggest ones have been for the workers at the lowest skill levels. So, for example, radio hosts, I don't think, are getting tremendously huge pay growth. They're getting some. Maybe more than normal, but not astronomical. By contrast, hotel workers and restaurant workers, McDonald's, for example, Walmart, these people are making $5-6 an hour more, from 15 to 20 in some cases, right? Huge percentage increases and meaningfully large amounts of money. So I think that because the vast majority of the increase in wages are going to people at the low end of the wage scale, the impacts on inflation are somewhat muted. They're not trivial, but if inflation's running at, say, 6%, the inflation that we're getting because of the wage increases is maybe 0.75%, so maybe 1/8 of the overall inflation pressures that we're feeling are the result of wage gains. That could change in the future if suddenly radio hosts and shock jocks and so on begin to get huge pay increases. But so far, it's been reasonably contained. And inflation that we're seeing is also generally contained to areas that are adversely affected by supply chains.
Dr. Elliot Eisenberg with us. How do people connect with you and get your perspective every day?
Best way to reach me is at econ70.com. Econ and the number 7, followed by the number 0.com. I put it on a website. You can support it there.
Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, thanks for joining us as always.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. I look forward to next time already, Kyle. Thank you.
1258 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.